It's been our custom for years to provide an opportunity for folks to think out loud about a recent significant retreat experience. What happens on retreats often is not well integrated. It kind of metabolizes in your subconscious. But when you make the effort to explain it to somebody who really understands what you're talking about, you start to connect the dots. It becomes more integrated, more accessible, and more useful. So that's why we do this. My good Dharma friend Mitch here just completed a significant retreat up in Massachusetts. So I'm eager to hear what you gleaned from your experience, sir.
Okay. All right.
Can you tell us which one you went to? Like what the name of the place was that you went to?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I actually
Thanks.
kind of took some time. I took the past couple of weeks, actually, since my meditation retreat to kind of get prepared for this.
Okay.
I couldn't come right after it. Because I had some aspects of it that I needed to get clear about. But the retreat that I attended, it was September 17th through the 28th, was a Goenka retreat at the Dhamma Dara Vipassana Meditation Center in Shelburne, Massachusetts. I think it was the first, I think that retreat center was the first such Goenka style meditation center in the US.
Yes.
Okay, it's a
Can
beautiful.
you tell what Goenka is?
Well, he's a teacher originally out of Burma who has a method of meditation practice called Vipassana, which is what the way he puts it was the original method that the Buddha wanted to emphasize. Okay.
Actually, Sharon Salzberg and Joseph Goldstein, who started the Insight Meditation Society, met at a Goenka retreat when they were in India.
And you'll understand more about what this is all about as as I go through my notes here, okay? The center was very beautiful. And it had an attached, spectacularly beautiful golden dome pagoda. And it's in a lovely forested setting with walking trails that I took advantage of. Unlike the Vipassana Meditation Center in Georgia, which I've also gone to, you don't have to go outside for any, for anything, with all the residences, dining, meditation halls, and pagoda cells accessible from inside the facility. This was my third 10-day Goenka retreat. All were Black heritage retreats. The first such retreat was in 2021 at this same Massachusetts center. 2 years later, I went, which was in 2023, I attended this a second Black Heritage Retreat at the Georgia Center. I'm not sure who started the Black Heritage Retreats, but I understand they've spread to other Vipassana centers in the US.
Yes.
Okay. The objective of these Black Heritage Retreats is to encourage and allow for such retreats to a growing number of Black folks to know and experience the benefits of the Dharma. It's the same opportunity as any other Goenka Vipassana retreat, but with a whole lot more Black faces, which was, you know, pretty amazing and very enjoyable to have. This was more people of color than I've seen at all the other retreats I've gone to over the 20 years of my practice. So It's a wonderful experience, as relief from misery is, as we all know, a universal need. It seems to have taken this third exposure to this mindfulness of the body, or Vipassana technique, as Goenka refers to it, for me to have a greater appreciation for what it offers. And that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to do this presentation, because I found that I finally was getting it, and I want to share what I am getting with others, because I think it's that important. Goenka himself, he's been dead since 2013, but he is still viewed as the teacher, with assistant teachers, or ATs, leading each retreat and providing guidance. But all meditation sessions and discourses, discourses is what he called meditation talks, are done with audio and video recordings Goenka completed prior to his death. And he has a somewhat hard to understand accent. So because I was at the back of the meditation hall throughout the 10-day retreat and could not easily read the closed captionings on the video discourses, I spent a lot of time over the last 2 weeks since the retreat reviewing all of the daily discourses to enhance what I missed at the retreat itself. And it's been very time consuming, but I view it as being very beneficial. I'm going to try to explain the essence of what I've gained from this third Goenka Vipassana retreat, then open it up for questions that any of you may have. And I haven't timed what I've put together here, but I think it should allow for a good bit of time to for any questions. The retreat experience, in essence, follows the Noble Eightfold Path, starting with sila, or morality, then samadhi, or mastery of the mind, and then punya, or wisdom, or purification of the mind. Sila, which includes in the Eightfold Path right speech, right action, right livelihood, and it's, it's basically morality. At the retreat, it involved being in noble silence, having men and women separated, and committing to the five precepts. You're basically setting a base for removing and avoiding impurities and defilements at the start of the retreat. Now, samadhi, which in the Eightfold Path include right effort, right mindfulness or awareness, and right concentration, which is, as you referred to it, mastery of the mind, involves the first 3 days of the retreat doing mindfulness of breathing, or anapana sati meditation, basically to calm and concentrate the mind through focus on the small triangular area from the nose to the area above the upper lip. And then last, punya, which in the Eightfold Path includes right view, right intentions, or wisdom, purification of the mind, it begins on day four, which is called Vipassana Day, where the focus for the rest of the retreat is on an ever-expanding mindfulness of the body meditation practice. Goenka refers to this practice as a deep surgical operation of one's own mind without anesthesia. I thought that was kind of interesting aspect. One must face all that arises with strong determination, he kept emphasizing that, of the mind. And it's how you ultimately allow for the changes of deeply embedded habit patterns of the mind that are the cause of our misery. He often said, you have to fight your own battles, work out your own salvation or liberation. We have to take every step on the path as no one else can carry us. But you do ultimately get support, grace, or mercy, as you might see it, as you take ownership along the path towards the final goal. Again, the first 3 days involves observing the natural flow of the breath, just the bare natural breath, with equanimity and without regulating it and without any visualizations or verbalization. He pointed out that some meditation practices allow for such visualizations or verbalizations, and it can result in a calm and concentrated mind more easily and quickly. But with this technique, concentration and quieting of the mind is not the final goal. Purification of the mind is, not just at the surface level, but at the deepest root level, allowing for the natural change of deeply rooted behavior patterns. This practice sets the stage for one to truly know thyself, not just the devotional or intellectual levels, as he referred to it, but at the direct experiential level. It's about identifying the physical and mental structures that creates the I and the mind with the associated attachments that cause our misery. This technique helps one to experience, to know experiences from the gross level to progressively subtler and subtler levels of the mind and body. Ultimately, you can know experiences beyond the mind and body towards knowing true peace, happiness, and harmony at the root level, not just the surface level. When you simply observe the breath moment to moment with equanimity, it prepares you for going deeper in observing sensations at a deeper and deeper level, where impurities of the mind or sankharas will arise and with continued observation with equanimity will eventually dissolve. On day four of Vipassana day, the practice moves for the rest of the retreat to the third part of the Eightfold Path of Punya, or wisdom insight, which nurtures right view and right intentions. Wisdom, insight, direct experience of the truth inside, and developing the wisdom of the universal law allows changing the habit patterns of the mind at the deepest level. The Vipassana practice purifies the mind, not just at the surface level, but at the deeper root level in what he refers to as the so-called unconscious. This is where all impurities originate, arise, and multiply. At the experiential level, with patient, persistent training, or basically taming of the mind, it becomes clearer and clearer how one cannot do unwholesome physical or verbal actions unless one has generated impurities in one's own mind. You're basically the first victim of your own defilements and impurities. Now, he points out there are three kinds of wisdom. Trust in what's said, like what Goenka himself has shared with us at the retreat, and what you've read. Number two is one's own intellectual understanding of these things or experiences that you have. And the third kind of wisdom is one's own experiential understanding. This practice offers largely the third type. The retreat's mindfulness of the body or Vipassana practice starts out with observing any and all sensations in the body, gross or subtle, pleasant or unpleasant, progressively and slowly, with non-reactive objectivity or equanimity, from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet, part by part. You observe each shoulder, arm, hand, and each hip, leg, foot individually at the start of the practice at the retreat. Over the remaining days of the retreat, one goes from a slow progression one way from the top of the head to your feet. Then you go both ways, part by part. Later, the progression is still both ways, including both shoulder, arm, hands, and hip, leg, feet at the same time. The Vipassana practice ultimately moves on to a body sweep versus part by part, and the pacing gets faster. Throughout each sit, one sweeps through the body fairly quickly in the areas with subtle sensation, but observing equanimously maybe 1 to 2 minutes in areas where you experience gross sensations, like you might be having a pain or you might be having heart palpitations or any sensations that is not just subtle. One can do all aspects of the Vipassana meditation in any particular bodily order. The order that he gave us, he basically is saying, is not, you know, a requirement. He just says that it should be done in some order and do not jump from one sensation to another. Now, the rest of what I'm going to share with you folks, I didn't get a chance to actually write it all down as I have written these other items down from my review of the discourses, but they were important to me and I want to share. He spoke of parts of the mind experience. You have the consciousness, first the consciousness, which are the six senses. You have recognition that occurs, and you have sensations, and then you have reactions or sankharas. And that's basically that. He said the so-called unconscious or root level of the mind is not impacted so much by the six senses, which the six senses are basically impacted by outside activities, you know, what you see, what you hear, what you feel. The unconscious mind is impacted by sensations that ultimately develop. It's important to observe misery as misery, he pointed out, which is the first noble truth, but observe it without reaction. That's the whole point of this method of Vipassana practice, to observe without reactivity. The deeper levels of the mind, the unconscious, habitually react with clinging and craving or aversion and hatred. The surface or intellectual level of the mind may understand how best to be or act, but exercises no control on blind, knee-jerk habit patterns. You know, you can kind of know you need to stop doing something, but find it very difficult to stop doing that something. He said the second noble truth, the real cause of the misery is within, not without. You come to see how mental pain is layered onto physical pain, making it misery. The deeper, stronger the attachment, the deeper, stronger the misery. When things aren't as you desire them to be, and the attachments or clinging is bound to bring significant misery. He pointed out how you're experiencing your own wisdom of the reality of suffering via the Vipassana meditation practice and working through it directly with non-reactive objective observations of whatever arises, pain or non-pain. Okay, now he wanted to point out that beyond devoted Vipassana meditation, during daily activities of walking, eating, or whatever, it's important to remain aware of sensations in the body areas of movement. You know, it could be your legs, your mouth, or whatever. And he also pointed out something I thought was pretty interesting, that sleep is required for giving the body and mind rest from daily activities. But even if you don't actually sleep, allowing the body to stay resting and the mind to focus on sensations that arise and stay in equanimous, it allows for a very renewing rest. So keep that in mind when you're laying in the bed and you're constantly looking at the clock or you want to use your phone or whatever, just lay there is basically what he's saying. So the body gets its rest and mindfully focus non-reactively on any sensations, subtle or gross, that you may have as you're laying there. And you probably wind up going to sleep. He pointed out two important aspects of the technique, the awareness and equanimity. And he wanted to emphasize how it must be equal in size and strength, like two wings of a bird. And then he pointed out, and this is something I know Peter has kind of emphasized a lot at different meetings, the process of what occurs. The six sense doors come in contact with respective outside objects. Then this context starts bodily sensations or that are either pleasant or unpleasant. Craving or aversion starts after experience of the of these bodily sensations. That link was missing prior to Gautama, the Buddha, discovering that. The root level practice before that, only surface level practice had been basically taught. Starting awareness in the small area, in our case, the triangular area from the nose to the upper lip, with awareness of breathing or the anapanasati, allows for sharpening the mind beyond just gross sensations. It basically sets the stage for awareness of gross and or subtle sensations any and everywhere in the body, with there being different levels of sensation everywhere all the time in the body anyway. With steady Vipassana practice, one goes through the stages of gross sensations to subtler and subtler pleasant flow of sensations. This can be dangerous, having those pleasant flow of sensations, if without non-reactive equanimity, one falls back into our old habit patterns of the mind and resorting to craving and clinging to such pleasant sensations. One must remember how all sensations are arising, then passing away, arising, then passing away, that nothing is permanent. That's one big aspect about this Vipassana practice. It's teaching us on an experiential level about impermanence. The so-called unconscious mind is always in touch with sensations reacting to them as pleasant or unpleasant. Such deep level reactions or sankharas are the habit patterns that we develop. Remaining equanimous with awareness of all sensations, pleasant or unpleasant, gross, subtle, will slow or stop the multiplication of sankharas, allowing them to come to the surface and be eradicated or evaporated. Okay, Vipassana is an art of living. So he was saying that it's important to incorporate it in your daily life. Diverting one's attention from the negativity that arises, either in sensual pleasure, devotion to some god or goddess or teacher, only suppresses the associated sensations, pushing it deeper into one's unconscious, but not resolving it. One must observe it with equanimity. When strong negativity arises to things happening at the physical level, at the gross level, what happens is your breathing changes. At the subtle level, a biochemical reaction starts with heat or tension or palpitations or perspirations. One must observe perspiration and sensations, not the object of the negativity, the outside object. Facing and observing the respiration and sensation is not avoidance or distraction. It's facing the internal process the negativity has engendered versus looking outward at the external object of one's negativity. You can't, this was a significant thing for me. You can't change others, only your own reactions. Thus the purpose of observing with equanimity. He pointed out the four parts of the mind, the cognizing that we do, or observing, the recognizing, the feelings, and the reactions, the sankharas. In looking at one's misery, you see that the reacting part is stronger and the organizing part is weaker. With Vipassana practice, that flips. All right, and the last thing, all sensations, pleasant or unpleasant, arise and pass away. One's actual experiences via Vipassana allow one to let go of habit patterns at the depth level, not intellectually at the surface level. Although the objective is to not react with craving or aversion at all, much practice may be required to come to that point. So it's okay to catch yourself after the fact of a reaction. If you have a reaction, you realize it's your reaction. But just as quickly as possible and with compassion, allow yourself to recognize that this too will pass. And that's pretty much it, folks. And if anybody has any questions, I hope this was understandable. I tried to basically go through and flow with what I got out of the experience over the course of the 10 days. But
one more question, Mitch, for you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the takeaway from this? How has it affected how you go through your day after the retreat? You just gave a really good rendition mm-hmm. of the doctrine and the practices, mm-hmm. but what impact does it have on your daily experience?
Well, I was reminded, I've told you and others about how this Access Links driving job that I do, I came to realize even more so how that is been that mirrors in a lot of aspects about the Vipassana practice, in that I'm constantly having to observe with equanimity as I'm driving down the road. And so it felt like, oh, okay, this is something that I do in daily life, and this is how it actually works. So it has helped me to just kind of settle down in my body and not be so caught up with what's happening on the outside, but just really pay attention to what's happening on the inside when I'm engaging with people. And I've had a lot of engagements with people since I've been back, especially after I took the time over the last 2 weeks to really get a better understanding of those Dharma talks that he gave. Because I spent those 10 days doing the physical practice. He had just audio for doing the actual physical meditation practices. So I didn't have to really understand all the details that I didn't really understand because I couldn't understand his accent and couldn't read the closed captioning. So after I really read that and looked back at my practice, I have basically committed to Vipassana practice for myself versus just mindfulness of breathing, because I began to see that mindfulness of breathing is good, but this is about settling oneself, calming oneself to be less reactive and so forth. But I know I have some deep issues that I want to be free of. I have some fear issues. I have some issues that cause me to have a tendency to pull back and not be that socially outgoing and so forth. And so my showing up here is part of the practice's work.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm
Say your
curious.
name for the folks who are seeing Zoom. Your name?
Oh, Robert. Robert. I did what you did in England, and I'm just curious to know, because it is a very tough regime, isn't it, every day? You're up at 4 o'clock, in the hall by 4:30, I think.
About 4:30, yeah.
I'm just interested because some people just left after a day or so. They couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
And it's a huge challenge and an ask, isn't it, of people. I'm just curious to know how you find it, because I know the first few days that I did it, that it got to the point where I thought, well, nothing's happening, it's not working. I spoke to the guys that you can speak to, and they said, just keep doing it, just
The
keep doing
course
it.
manager
And
said.
then something gave, but I did
Okay.
find that, there was it I got something up from it. But I started to think, well, all I've got to do is watch the mental energy coming up. I don't really have to watch going around the body, but that was just my thing.
Well, the thing
It
about
seemed better to do that, really.
the thing
the body is important.
the thing about meditation practice that I've come to realize is, I don't think your first meditation practice should be a 10-day Goenka retreat. And there were some folks there that did that. And there were some folks that left early too from
Yeah,
this retreat.
right.
Some people get bored. Some people just can't handle the rigor of that. But, like Peter just recently had a 1-day meditation retreat in Apopka. People should do that and then go up to like a weekend retreat or something like that before embarking on something like this, because strong determination, that's one of the things that Goenka kept saying. You basically, it's important to decide, okay, I believe from what you're telling me, the wisdom you're sharing with me, that I will get something from this. And I just have to have strong determination and being there and just simply going through the motions and doing it, and allowing for those benefits to arise of their own nature. So yeah, I just don't think anybody should do a 10-day retreat as their first.
Yeah, Mike has something, and then Marty.
And that's my buddy Andy. Yeah.
Hey there, Mitch. Thank you for sharing your experience.
Okay, Mike.
Hey, you mentioned the treat was Black Heritage. I'm wondering if that included Indigenous and other people of color.
Oh yeah. In fact, there were a lot of whites is there as well. Not a lot, but some. But the way it works is it's primarily focused on Black heritage, but they're not going to turn someone away that seeks to be a part of it. So yeah, one of the things, as I pointed out earlier, I've been doing meditation practice mostly through Peter for 20 years. And, I don't see very many black faces showing up at a lot of these retreats. So the fact that through the Goenka system, they decided to put some emphasis on encouraging folks to show up.
They do that at IMS too.
And IMS is doing it too. Yeah, but yeah, anybody will be allowed the opportunity to practice to do, come, including indigenous folks. But the emphasis is on black folks.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to agree with your advice about starting slow. Yeah, like definitely a 1 day and then a 2 day, maybe a 5 day. Get some retreat experience under your belt, some basic principles before you attempt a Goenka retreat. And I think going in with a strong practice helps. If you're someone who meditates every day, I mean, it's just kind of like building up to a certain level before you go into something that extreme is helpful.
Yeah, because it is rigorous.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I think that's the part that really attracts me about it, is that it's very disciplined, very regimented,
I'm
and
a
it
Buddhist.
really it should help you to focus your attention on what you're learning, and increases your ability at the end to really focus. And also with the BIPOC is you're starting to see that more and more at retreat centers all across the United States. But still, so the retreat I went to in May, which was about there were about 90 retreatants, and I would say there were about 12 people of color, Black, Indigenous people of color. So there's still a long way to go, definitely. One last thing. So you mentioned pleasant experiences and unpleasant experiences, and dealing with them in an equanimous way. But I know my own daily life, the vast majority of what I experience in my life is neutral, not unpleasant or pleasant. So I dwell in this place of neutrality quite a bit. Of course, there's pleasant and unpleasant mixed in there, but again, the vast majority is neither pleasant or unpleasant. It's just kind of in the neutral zone. So I was wondering if during the Goenka retreat there was much or any discussion about what you do with neutrality, with neutral feelings.
Well, I mean, the whole point of the practice is to just observe without reactivity. So if anything, you're basically trying to allow whatever that's deep inside of you to arise so that you're not being impacted in your life by whatever arise. So if you're getting mostly neutral, I don't really know how he would address that. You have any idea, Peter?
Yeah, look closer.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing you say is that the gross defilements have been evaporated to some extent. There's still defilements, and defilements it's a kind of a harsh word, but what it really means is that what clutters up the mind, the ego. So the neutrality It's not being, you're a retired person, right, Mike?
I am.
So you don't have to go to work every day, et cetera, et cetera. So that supports this quality of your lifestyle. So the idea is to use that balance, that serenity as a platform to go deeper,
Look closer, yeah.
look closer.
Yeah. Andy, you may have something on that.
Well, we have Marty and Mary have their
Okay.
hands raised. They're
Sorry,
being
sorry.
very patient. So, Marty, how about you, ma'am? Marty, can't hear you. You have to unmute.
Oh, I mine is more of an itch kind of question, like when something itches. And I know you're supposed to ignore it, but when you said you couldn't see the screen, you couldn't read the text, why couldn't you just move closer to the screen?
Everybody has assigned seats.
Oh, and can't you just say you can't see it? And I mean, like, what if you were blind? What or what if you were hard of seeing? Are they do they not accommodate people's like disabilities and stuff?
Absolutely. They do, absolutely. So if there's anything in particular that I needed them to be aware of, to account for, then I would have indicated that prior to coming to the retreat. So it was just to me, I was equanimous
Yeah.
with the situation as it was.
Right. I know you're probably a lot farther along on that than I would have been. So yeah. Okay. And it sounds like you really focused a lot on what the body, you connected the mind and the body a lot. So that was kind of interesting.
That's really what it's all about. I mean, mindfulness of breathing, Anapanasati meditation is a form, basically, of body awareness because it's the breathing. You feel the breath coming through across your lip and so forth. So it seems to me that's part of the reason why he starts there because it's a something that is happening all the time. And you can change your breathing, but it's going to happen all the time. So it's kind of like that was the lead in to the broader body awareness.
And how do they make it about Black heritage or in Native American or Indigenous? How do they do that? When you say they focus on that, what do you mean?
Well,
I don't.
I don't know who basically started these Black Heritage retreats. But I'm certain that certain Black folks have came to the center and said we'd like to emphasize recruiting Black folks to a retreat.
I know something about how that works. I know that the people who are responsible for these centers, the Goenka and the other forms, they actually inquire. They go out and talk to people in the community. And people show up. People like you show up, or Will, or other folks, and or Charla. Charla's really into it. So I think that their efforts are being made. No one's forcing this on the meditation
No.
community. There's an active, engaged interest.
And
Well, the reason.
let me just mention this one other thing. I went to the very first Black Heritage retreat there at the same center in Massachusetts. And again, it was most all Black folks from all over the country. And
Probably from all over the world.
there was such excitement about having this avenue for releasing oneself from misery
Right.
among everybody. So we had different people when we could talk again after the 9 days of the retreat on the 10th day. They started planning to have other Black Heritage retreats at other places. I know, like in Washington, I think, Washington State, Oregon, in various places. So the energy got generated by people that attend and word of mouth, and then just engaging with the retreat centers and setting them up.
Marty, I You're
One
asking.
more thing, real fast. The reason I ask that is because I've spent two trips in Canada, and I'm so impressed with what Canada is doing with their Indigenous or the Aboriginal. They have a day of reconciliation. The government has apologized for all the things that they've done to the Aboriginal. They've a big movement in Canada try to bridge what they did to them, and they've started renaming parks after the Indigenous names, and they incorporate them into like the arts and social scenes. So they're trying really to educate the population about the contributions and about the Aboriginals. And I just wondered, I mean, I think that's so beautiful. And I wondered what we're doing here. And this is, I like that they're doing
That's beyond
the
the
heritage
scope
thing.
of, that's beyond the scope
What?
of tonight's focus.
Yeah, but I'm asking, is that what they're doing with the heritage, the African American heritage? I was asking what.
I think, Mark, there's just a ground level realization among Black folks that do retreats that we need to make sure that this is made available to others like us. And
Okay.
so it's like taking control within, not the government or some larger
Right. I
authority,
get what you're
but
saying.
taking ownership. I mean, because one of the things that I've come to realize personally is that I am not a victim in ways that I grew up in Alabama
Right.
feeling victimized. And
Okay,
so,
so.
yeah, I don't want to dwell on this too far. It's a very important topic,
So
but there are three
it's
other people
providing a
before he was up.
space. It's what you're saying is it's providing a space for you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
Thank you.
Gary, how about you, ma'am?
Yes, so I wanted to ask, I was curious about the guidance that is given for the body scan. You've said that it's the top of the head to the bottom of the feet, but what do you do when you're going from your head, you get down to your neck? Do you go down one arm at a time, or is it like you go down both arms, or is it like a printer scanner that just you go across no matter what you encounter? How is it done?
Mary, if you go to the Orlando Insight website and you go to the audio archives
Huh?
and you use the search terms body scan meditation or body sweep meditation, there are guided meditations that I have done on retreats. They're there for you to listen to. It'll give you step by step. Just
Okay.
turn it on and go along for the ride.
And also, you may have missed it. Part of my presentation talked about that progressive steps that you're asking about. And I'm going to have Peter's going to have the audio of that plus my notes, and you'll be able to see that in the notes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Christy?
Hi, Mitch. Thanks for doing this talk.
Uh-huh.
I basically had two questions for you. The first one was you said you couldn't see the subtitles, super titles, or whatever the of the talks that Gwenka gave. And so when you got home, you wrote it down. Did they provide you literature, like written out of his talks?
No, actually, I asked the assistant teacher one of the times that I talked to him, who's a good friend of mine. I met him at the first retreat, and he's moved up to assistant teacher. He said, "Just Google Goenka 10-day meditation," and that's all I did. Just Google it,
And then the other question,
and
the
it
other question that I
has
had,
all it has.
huh?
It has all the talks, and
Okay.
I didn't look further to see if all of it was written. So I've just spent a whole lot of hours listening to all of those 1+ hour 10 retreats.
Wow, that's commitment. So my other question was, you said there are assistant teachers. Do they do interviews like they do at the Insight Meditation
Absolutely.
Society?
Absolutely.
Okay,
Well,
so is that like
not
daily? You
exactly
get
the
an
same way. There,
ah.
yes, there are interviews, but there's a different kind of frame at IMS than there is at any of the Goenka retreats. And I'm not saying they're better, but they're different.
I never did do any of the interviews, but they gave everybody plenty of opportunities to schedule interviews with the assistant teachers. After each sit, they always ask if you got questions, come up. So I went up and talked to the male assistant teacher various times, and they had one for the women as well. So you could get tidbits of understanding as you're going along. Plus,
Gotcha.
the course manager is very helpful too.
Okay, thanks.
Andy.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, that was a great presentation. I think that it was very specific with how those retreats go, the retreats. I think
We've been on several Goenka retreats, so
well, a
I'm going
lot
to
more than
say that
several.
for
Okay,
the
like times
other,
five.
right?
Okay.
Just
So
so that other people who are
yeah, I
just
appreciate it.
getting to know that.
Yeah, like yeah, in fact, Peter, I was involved in that community for like 15 years, maybe more. Okay.
Yep.
So to me, like it depends on the student, right? Like some students are like really determined, right? And they can do that and they're real motivated to do that. And to me, it's just sitting, right? I mean, I love the technique, the technique of Vedana, paying attention to sensations and feelings. We actually, when we did Goenka retreats in Florida, we have 75 people at retreat, nobody leave, and I think it was a lot because of the course management. But the question is, for you is, could you talk about like, metta and going into metta day and what your metta day experience was like?
Well,
Metta is loving kindness for those who are otherwise uninformed.
Andy, I can't really remember the details of it. If you've followed my trajectory, I feel almost like I have a natural metta orientation, whereas I don't focus significantly in my practice on metta. So the was it the 11th day, I think.
11th. It's a 10-day retreat.
The 10th day is where he got into that. And I didn't get a chance to go into that part as far as reviewing what he talked about. Sorry. I have a natural tendency towards loving kindness, so I don't focus on that with the practice.
So, Julian, how about you, sir? You've also been Goenka retreats.
Yeah, thank you, Mitch, for the description and the summary. I'm also curious about. I heard that you have been for this is your third retreat. I just want to know if there was something that was easier for you to understand through your practice, or some days which you where did you struggle more, or some difference between the. Or any expectations, because the format is very similar and is the same, and the talks are also the same. So what is your experience about the different retreats?
The three different retreats that I went to?
Or just maybe with the last one, what did you notice some difference or something in the discourse that kind of clicked more, because through your experience, it was kind of it was easier to understand because of the experience.
In fact, even though I couldn't read the closed captioning, I understood most of what he said. And with what he said and with the meditation practices that we did, I began to recognize how this was happening, this ability to observe within my body and in a non-reactive way, just simply pay attention to this and allow whatever reaction that may have come up to not be given such a stage. And like I said, at one point, it's very similar to what happens when this driving job that I do. Because, I've got to drive. When you're driving and I got passengers, you've got to have 99% present moment awareness, observation, the observe part.
And the non-reaction part.
And when it comes to all the fools that are driving on the roads out there, and all the kind of various reactions that your disabled passengers have, and then dispatch. Oh gosh, I avoid dispatch like the plague. But I learned how to be basically at a such a peace where the seven factors of awakening, joy and concentration, and all of those seem to just a natural arrive and I arise. And I've told Pete about this before too, and it's like, wow, this is a joyous, pleasant place to be in. And so I got a sense from the retreat that I've already been practicing this stuff quite a bit. And so, but the previous times I went to the Goenka retreats, I guess I just wasn't ready to, I was still in the intellectual phase.
Right.
I had a more of a readiness and capability to really go experiential.
The aha moment. So, Alex?
One question. Now that you've been practicing for a while and gone to several retreats, how would you say that particularly the retreats have contributed to your perception of the solidity of self or the lack thereof?
Well, I
If at
am,
all.
yeah, I'm real clear. I'm real clear conceptually about how that is, and I have a lot of moments experientially of how that is. Again, I go back to my little driving job. I could just be in the moment in such a way where I'm just flowing through the day. There's a flow factor of engaging with situations instead of some solidified sense of me and mine. I don't have as much, even in other interactions with people, a need for it to be me or mine and to just flow at what is. And, I've kind of developed an orientation towards realizing that the world does not revolve around me anyway, and it don't revolve around anybody else. So we're all in this together. So that's a flow factor. That to me has moved away from that solid me, you, that kind of thing.
Would you say that that helps you kind of express that equanimity, like living in that?
Well, equanimity is given the opportunity to arise.
Right.
Basically, I mean, well, by not being caught up in as much of a sense of self, it works with the equanimity aspects of things. And so, yeah, it's kind of fueled. My equanimity grows.
One last little aspect. Would you say that the retreats particularly have contributed more to that, or is it more gradual your entire life?
Well, it's kind of like it's really like both, because
Yeah.
before I went to this retreat, I was experiencing, I had some family issues, some other issues that were kind of blowing up for me. You know, my equanimity was getting brittle.
Right.
My reactivity was, was enhanced. And so I told some folks that this is a mental health opportunity for me. So that's probably why I was more open to it than the other to the Winker retreat, because I needed this.
Thank you so much.
John, and then we're going to wrap it up.
I think that that your whole explanation and that whole lecture has dealt on a blending of losing yourself in the process, and that becomes a new way. And it was very obvious that you touched that in almost everything you spoke about. And I think that is one of the keys to why everybody, or why I sit. And I think if I didn't have that, I would explode, because it's as bad as I can be. I've been doing it a long time. I have a harder time sitting recently, but the same result happens, and I'm always grateful. So I really appreciate it.
Because there's a lot going on in the world
Oh,
that
absolutely.
really gets you all jacked up. And you got to realize, what can I do and work within your realm, deal with yourself first.
And you can learn that it is your reaction that is doing the damage, and you can reverse that. Spend time on that.
You're the first victim of all those reactions
And you can
yourself.
carry it. And you can carry it. Maybe. That's the whole bottom line. Carry it.
So I really, really appreciate your talk tonight, Mitch. As you were talking, I was doing the body scanning, whole body
I knew
scanning.
you were, because
Yeah,
you
it's
do a
what I
lot
do. It's
of
what I do.
it.
It really is a valid kind of way to train for this. But I want to put this notion of retreats into a particular context. People will spend good money to go train to, I don't know, play tennis or go on some other kind of music camp or something like that, because there's a particular skill they want to develop. And there's a particular aesthetic that they want to develop, with music especially, but also with playing tennis. You get in the groove of playing, and it becomes a joy, and the grace of it is just astounding. That's what a retreat is. And people will go and spend hours and hours a day on the tennis court or playing a musical instrument. To acquire that skill. So just consider that your sense of being in the world is an instrument. And we've been trained to make a lot of racket. The fancy word for it is cacophony. The mind is churning all the time. We can learn how to train the mind to be present in a less reactive way, more adaptive way. And it does come from the kind of embodied training that this practice represents. So just wanted to share that with you.
Let me say one last thing too. The unique way that Goenka does his retreats too is you don't have to pay anything for the retreat. So you basically come in there and you do your what are those five things at the beginning and so forth?
Precepts?
Yeah, the precept. You basically are
You
entering
promise to
in.
be honest to yourself. You promise not to harm anybody. You promise not to get intoxicated. You promise not to act out sexually.
And you promise to not, what is it, the last precept? Huh? Right speech, yeah. Noble silence.
Yeah. But the thing that I wanted to emphasize is you're not paying to go to this. So you're basically becoming a monk for 10 days, you know? And the food, you know, I didn't like a lot of the vegetarian food and so forth, but I'm basically going in there with my begging bowl. And so you kind of like go amok on this retreat for 10 days. And then if you get enough out of it, you donate at the end of the retreat, if you choose. I met people before who don't donate anything. I've been to multiple retreats or give $100. You know, I gave a good bit more than that, but it's a good experience. And you don't have to worry about the money aspect when it comes to Goenka.
Yeah, the other thing I would say about the retreat, you know, my first retreat was 10 days long. It was at Insight Meditation Society. It just so happens that Ruth Dennison, who was the teacher for that retreat, had been trained by the same person who trained Goenka. So I got exposed to it early on. I went to my first retreat. I had never been on a retreat before. I just decided that I was going to surrender to whatever they wanted because I was up to my ears with misery and did not want to have to deal with that way of living anymore. And it was transformative. So there are retreats. I teach one-day retreats. We have historically had one-week retreats, but that's kind of shaky right now because of the availability of sites. But the Goenka retreat is in Southeast Georgia. It's a few hours drive away. And elsewhere in the country. And sitting on a regular basis, which is what we do in this community, also is very important. So thanks once again, Mitch, for your commitment to this practice and to our friendship. I really appreciate that. And next week, we're going to have a presentation from Leslie Laws about her practice experience. I'm not quite sure what the topic is tonight. So it's our custom at the end of each meeting to sit together in silence for a few moments. Let's do that. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well and hope we're all reasonably safe and happy until the next time we have a chance to chat.